Stock Eliminator to the lanes. We need Stock Eliminator to the lanes.
Welcome, everybody, to the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. Introducing your host, RaceToolsDirect.com's own Aaron Allison and the Cobra Jet flying Charlie Downing, better known as Chuck.
This podcast is proudly presented by Race Tools Direct, your source for all of your racing tools and equipment needs. Visit racetoolsdirect.com or call 440-941-8533 to order today.
All right, welcome to the Class Racing Podcast, episode number 18. How you doing, Charlie? Ready for big episode number 18?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready. Always ready. I was on a little bit of a hiatus here the last couple of weeks, but I'm back.
Yeah, so Charlie's been on a little hiatus. It's harvest time at the Downing's family farm. How many acres you guys got left?
300 and some.
300 and some left to harvest?
Yep.
And how many have you harvested?
About 100 and a half.
Man, you guys got to get going here.
Well, it's been a rough year. Everything was late, and we got 2 inches of rain on Saturday, so that didn't help out at all.
How much can you harvest in like a good day's work?
Well, in our equipment that's 30 years old, we probably do 50 acres a day if the weather will cooperate, but it hasn't been cooperating, so we're down to about probably 30, 35 acres a day we can do.
Nice.
So well, then we break everything we touch, so that's the other issue. We snapped an axle on a 3-ton truck somehow. Been a hitch on something else, so it's just another standard operating procedure for us.
Well, I'm sure Bob's out there in the garage right now hitting it hard, fixing the equipment, giving you a little time to do the podcast, so thanks to Bob.
Yeah, he's our chief mechanic.
Yeah, cool. Well, so you in the truck, you ready to go?
I'm always ready to go, man.
Yeah, so we find that Charlie has the best recording if he sits in his truck and uses his hands-free device. So if you ever ride by Charlie's house on a weeknight at like 10 o'clock, that's why he's sitting in the truck in the driveway.
I got the lights off. I'm not a creep.
Nice, nice. All right, we got a pretty fun episode tonight to bring to you. We got 4 or 5 topics that Charlie and I are going to talk about. And then we're going to bring on 2 weeks ago's winner at the ZMAX Charlotte NHRA Nationals, Robbie Dranghorn, in his beautiful Superstock A modified Corvette. He's going to be guest here at the end. So you have to listen to Charlie.
Pictures really don't do that car justice. I saw it down south this spring, and I mean, it's just the interior's beautiful, paint's beautiful, detail work's beautiful on the car. I mean, it's a very nice piece.
Yeah, I run an A and B modified with my Cavalier, as most of you know. And when we were at Atlanta, I think, when he debuted the car a few years back. And I was kind of excited because it's an awesome car. But I was pretty disappointed, too, because I knew it would be one more car I'd have to worry about heads up. So, but Robbie's a great guy. It's an awesome car, like you said. So. All right, Charlie, well, let's talk a little bit about NHRA points. We have one divisional race and 2 national events left on the schedule here for 2019. And the points championships really have kind of narrowed themselves down to really just a few people that have a shot. And if we had done this before about a week ago, it was definitely much more wide open. But at the Dallas National event, and then there was a points meet the same weekend at Rockingham. What was that last week? Made some pretty big changes to the kind of the landscape. So,
in both stock and super stock. So it was a pretty big week.
Yeah, for sure. So it was a pretty big change. And you know, I think let's first talk about Joe Santangelo. If you go back a few weeks, I mean, Joe's leading both stock and super stock. And, you know, he had six, was 644 on stock, which is usually, you know, in the ballpark are good enough to get it done. I would say, you know, the champ usually takes mid 600 to as high as 7, I think, is kind of in the range. What do you say, Charlie?
Yeah, I would say normally 640 to, you know, 675, you know, if you're playing the averages game. You know, once in a while somebody will win it with, you know, 5.25 like Edmund did one year, and then you'll have a year, I think it was Biondo had like 715 or something one time, or 710. I mean, it was just basically a perfect score almost.
Yeah, so, you know, he had to be feeling pretty decent. You know, in Superstock, I think he only had 614 or so. So, you know, not feeling as good, but you know, still a really strong showing. And at this point, after last weekend's events, he's no longer leading. And I'm not so sure he'll finish second either.
Yeah, if you had told me Joe wouldn't have been leading at least one of those categories going into the last three races, you know, out west. The Superstock one, I could see maybe somebody going around him, you know, 614, it's somewhat low. But it's 650 in stock, and really nobody kind of hanging around, especially when you look at the national events, nobody was dominating, you know, winning, you know, one or two national events or semifinals or anything. So, you know, we really weren't paying attention to really anybody. I mean, I pretty much had Joe picked, you know, after Pennsylvania. You know, I didn't think anybody, I mean, other than maybe Jody Lang or Slade or somebody like that, you know, they had some races left. I really thought there was only about two guys to come around him. And then, you know, all of a sudden out of nowhere, somebody, you know, came right to the top and, you know, went around him by, you know, not 10 or 15 points, but almost 40, you know, or over 40.
Yeah. So let's talk about Superstock to start with. So the leader right now is Vic Penrod, and he is from Texas, has a 69 Camaro, right? Superstock C automatic car.
Yeah, I mean, not the prettiest car on the property by any means, but it definitely works and runs the number.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what I would consider kind of an old school Superstock car. You know, if you go back into the time a little bit, it's kind of what I think of when you think of a Superstock car. And he went to Dallas and had to go some rounds to pass Joe. And man, he did not only go some rounds; he won the race.
Yeah, I mean, in pretty impressive style. I mean, he really. You know, dominated the whole day, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, he had a few runs that weren't so great, but he had some really good runs. He was really good when he needed to be, and when he didn't need to be, he wasn't good. Looks like he drove the finish line well, and, you know, dodged a little bit of a bullet in the final there when Aaron Stanfield was red, because he can always be tough. But, you know, this was his second national event win this year, and only his third career national event ever. So that kind of shows you the dominant year that he's had.
And this is really someone who's, you know, we haven't really been familiar with him. I mean, you and I raced in Division III. I never really heard his name up until about 18 months ago. He was a Division IV All-Star rep, did fairly well last year, and, you know, I kind of got to see him in Chicago, and, you know, he had pretty good success there. But I, you know, if you'd have told me 3 years ago, I wouldn't have known who he was, what he was, or what kind of car he had.
Yeah, and I talked to a friend from Texas, and he said that he's kind of been on the bottom ball bracket race scene for a long time and had, you know, a lot of success over the years. So definitely not an unknown you know, person kind of in that world, especially in Texas. But yeah, I'd agree with you, Charlie, before and after. So now he's leading back. He's back in the first place. Power was awesome. He was 15 and just so when you look at kind of what's left, Vic Penrod has one national event to claim. looks like he's entered for the Las Vegas National event this coming weekend. But you know, for him, it's going to be a pretty hard thing to improve. He's got two wins, so that's 2 105s, and his other national event score is an 84. So, you know, really, he's got runner up to improve.
Yeah, I mean, because those races are all going to be 7-rounders because it's over. The quota was 55, and they're all 10 over. So, I mean, a semifinals 83, it really doesn't do you any good.
Yeah, so he's got a runner up. He's got a runner up to improve. So, yeah, not saying that he can't do that, you know, given his recent history here. But that's going to be tough, especially with the field of who's who in entry Superstock Racing in Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to go in the last three races ahead, especially when you look back at it. And, you know, you and I are talking, and there's really only two guys I think that got a legitimate chance to catch him. You know, the first one being Kyle Rizzoli. You know, Kyle's got a tough road to hoe to go around there, but not impossible. You know, Camella's a little farther back. His road's a little tougher. But, you know, those guys come out and, you know, win the first Vegas race or get to the final, you know, that points me. It's going to come down to that points me. I think by the time they go to Pomona, I think none of this will matter. I think it'll be, you know, somebody will have gone around them or it'll be over.
Yeah, no, I agree. And kind of looking at the, you know, if I nerd out a little bit on the points here, Kyle was always his lowest national he's claiming is a 73. So that means he can improve 32 points, which would be enough to take the lead. So if he can, you know, win a runner-up in the national event, that's going to, you know, pay dividends. And the points meet the next week, which he can also claim full. He is claiming a 51. So that's probably his best chance to gain points. Is that the points meet? If he wins round three, he's gaining points in the points meet. So
yeah, and Kyle races out there all the time. You know, he kind of runs that Division 7. You know, so he's in a really good spot with two races to basically try to win a runner-up. You know, and he's had success at Vegas. He's had success at Pomona. At this point, I wouldn't call him a long shot, you know, just because of where it's at. It's not like he's got to travel to, you know, Noble, Oklahoma or somewhere he's never raced before. I mean, these are kind of basically, you know, short 5-6 hour tows, if that, you know, so...
Yeah,
so he's chasing, but he's not driving around, you know, like you get to the end of the year where you get to some of these division champs and you got to go to Rockingham or Adel or Noble, and it's a 15 or 16 hour tow one way for some of these guys, and, you know, that wears and tears on you also.
Yeah, so he's definitely got a shot. I think probably the best shot, I would agree. Steve Camella, if he goes to one of the two finals, he's right there. He's in fifth currently. Ricky Decker in sixth is currently done. He's out of claims with 581. And he's another guy. I mean, obviously a great racer, former world champ. If, you know, I think he got runner-up at the Bristol National event, and it was like his third or fourth final of the year. I really thought that, you know, he would have been, you know, leading this right now. I mean, I really thought he was had the most momentum at mid-year. And,
yeah,
you know,
I think
he just lost a lot of good races just talking to him, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of those deals. He had three or four coin flip races and just couldn't buy any luck. I mean, Charlotte, you know, Columbus, Sports Nationals. I mean, he didn't drive any different than he drove at the beginning of the year. And, you know, just, you know, you sometimes the ball just doesn't bounce your way, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Now, some other guys that mathematically have a chance. You got Aaron Stanfield in eighth. He's got a chance. He's got three races to go. I believe he was on the list too, right, Charlie? Let's look real quick.
Yeah, I think he is. Those guys will probably go, even though.
Yeah, he's there, so he'll be there. He's got a chance. You got Irvin Johns in ninth. That's he's 100 points back, but he can claim all three races. And for his nationals, he's currently claiming 240s. So, you know.
Yeah, I know that they're all going. I know. I was talking to Todd the last race I went to. And
yeah, so he's on the list. He's you know, he's if you know, Todd helps him and they dial the car very well. Irvin is a blinder racer and he can be very good sometimes. Wouldn't count him out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Irvin's got a lot of good people around him. You know, you got, you know, Todd's dad, Gary. You know, Bobby's been helping him out here this year. You know, they got a good nucleus of people there also.
Yeah, good equipment, good cars.
Yep.
And then, let's see, who else? I think Michael Manns, he's in 12th. And he's got a bunch of races to claim. But I did not see him on the list. But really, out of all the people that kind of should have been making the trip, he really has probably one of the best shots. But he's a long way back. He's over 100 points back. But theoretically, could go to 6 more races. Now, obviously, there's only 3, but he's probably won it.
Big problem for those guys is getting there from Minnesota. And
By
the time you get back in November, I mean, you could have 2 foot of snow on the ground and can't get back in your driveway. I mean, that's always a... Yeah, I know DeForest and those guys have left and driven back in snow, and you know, so I don't. You look at it, and yeah, he's got a chance, but I don't blame those guys for kind of just saying, nah, it's not for me.
Yeah, so you know, pretty cool. You got the guys that we're talking about in the low teams that still have a chance, mathematically, and yeah, it's pretty cool. I do agree with you, Charlie. I think after this weekend and maybe definitely after the points meet, I think this will pretty well be wrapped up. But there's definitely some guys that could get hot out west and make this real interesting. So my money is I think Vic's going to hold out. I really do. I'm not sure why. I just think that he's had that kind of year. A lot of good guys have a good chance.
Oh, yeah.
Now to move to stock, we have Allison Dahl in the lead with 689 points. And same type of deal. She was in Rockingham. Now it's a Division II race for her last claim of the year. And I think she had to win round 2 to pass Joe Santangelo for the lead. And she did a lot more than that. She went and kind of ran the table and won the event and drove really well. I believe she was perfect in the final. If I bring it up real quick. Yeah, she's perfect in the final. Her last 4 lights, she was 13, 21, 12, and 000. So she obviously drove great.
She drove the starting line great. You know, a couple of us were looking at it, and she drives the starting line great. You know, she got away with taking 600 here, 500 there, 600 here. I mean, but, you know, when you're 10 on the tree and your opponent's 60, you can get away with driving the finish line like that.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to be able to doubt that car very well. She seems to doubt hard. I don't think she's playing too many games. And I tell you what, one of the most impressive things, some guys on Class Racer on Facebook were saying that I think somebody may have done this a long, long time ago, but nobody's done this in recent years, including Peter Biondo when he had that 700-plus score, you know, in the early 2000s. But she won all 5 of her division races that she's counting international points total. So 5 NHRA division race wins in 2019. That's pretty impressive. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's not much to say there. It speaks for itself.
Yeah, so I think she's definitely deserving of a world championship the way she's driven. Her national event score is a little bit weaker, but 689 points. I'd love to be in her shoes with a couple races left with that kind of lead. Joe Santangelo with 644 is in second. Obviously, a score that many years is good enough to win it. But he's claimed out, and Allison's out as well. So they're both waiting. I'm sure she'll be, you know, kind of watching the races coming up this weekend very closely. Jody Lang is in third, and just from our quick math, it looks like he cannot catch. He is mathematically ineligible, and I don't know exactly what the stats are on him, Charlie, but, I mean, he has been in the top 5 it seems like every year for the last 10.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that reminds me of growing up, Mike, like watching Mike Walters. I mean, we'd see Mike Walters in the top 10, I mean, in the 90s every year, it seemed like. And Jody's kind of the same way. He's always right there, you know, 5, 7. He's won a couple championships, but he never, I mean, hardly ever does he fall out of the top 20. I mean, if he does, it's just, it's an off year. I don't even know if he has in the past 10, 15 years. I mean, he's always both, you know, drives two cars, you know, and not the way most guys drive two cars now. I mean, drives a, you know, 79 to 81, you know, station wagon, and then a two-door, you know, G-body Malibu, not a Copo, not an automatic car, you know. I mean, you know, basically one of the slowest super stockers out there, and probably the same thing for a stocker. I mean, there's not really much out there that's slower than Amarin anymore, other than a couple front-wheel drive cars. So here's a guy, you know, against totally the odds of, you know, different than what everybody else is doing. You know, Allison Dahl, you know, Santangelo, all these guys running, you know, low tens, high nines. And here's Jody doing it in a car that goes, you know, 1220s to 1190s. You know, and then just, you know, time after time after time. I mean, I think he's won like 32 or 33 national events, you know, in stock and super stock in the last 25, 30 years. And that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, and it seems like he's always in the running at the end of the year, but has not been able to do it, or just on the outside looking in. So another impressive score for him was 602. Brenda Grubbs in fourth with 561. Very, very impressive as well.
Yep.
You got Austin Williams in fifth. And just doing the math real quick, and Allison's got a really good shot to wrap this up in the next week. I think there are a few guys that have a chance, guys or girls. I think Brenda has a mathematics. I don't know if she did or not. Let's see here.
I know Slate's got he's got pretty much on the table.
Yeah, Brenda's not.
He's got a shot.
Yeah, I think there's a few guys. Slate, I think Justin Lamb may have a shot. But, I mean, they'd have to run the table. You know, if they lose one or two rounds, I mean, if they lose a round, I think he can't catch. So.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to put money on anybody that's going to give her a run for the money, it's probably Lamb. I mean, he drives so well at Vegas and Pomona. You know, he lives right there just outside of Vegas. He's won so many races at that track. You know, he's got good equipment, good people around him. It would not surprise me if he goes out there and, you know, puts that Copo, or I don't know what they've got. I think they still got that white Copo. You know, goes out there, wins the national event this weekend and goes deep. You know, if not, he could win two in a row real easy. I mean, he's done it before. It's just another day at the office for him, really. So it's far from over, but, you know, she's definitely in a great spot. You know,
by my math, okay, Justin, if he runs the table, wins all three races, he wins by one round. So,
really?
Is it possible?
I thought he had okay.
Yeah, looks like it's possible, but
yeah, it's pretty tough.
Can he do that? Yeah, he can. But man, I think I'd really be sitting in Allison's spot.
I was thinking he didn't have to win all three races. I was thinking he had to go to two finals and like a fourth or a fifth, but
yeah, looks like that's what he's got. I think Slate's got a little bit easier road to hoe here, but not much. So that's kind of the deal. So, okay, so we wanted to kind of wrap up the NHRA points, but you know, I think Vic and Allison both had a really good shot. I think what you said, I think Kyle's probably Kyle Rizzoli's best chance to overtake.
It's funny because, you know, when we talked about this, probably it was way before Indy, so probably end of July, maybe first or second week of August, those two names weren't even really in the topic of conversation at all.
No, I think you're right. You're absolutely right.
You know, I mean, we pretty much had – you know, figured Joe was going to win one, and Ricky was driving real good at that time. A couple other guys were up there, but, you know, it's just crazy how this stuff, you know, changes, you know, in the last 90 days.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so next we wanted to just kind of give some recognition to some of the Stock Superstock series that runs throughout the country. Most of their points battles are over for the year. Just want to give a little recognition. And we're going to try to get each of these guys on over the winter here when it's a little bit colder and there's not as much racing going on, and maybe hear a little bit more about them. I don't even know all of these names, I'll be honest. Definitely some new guys for me. Why don't we start out with the Great Lakes series, Troy?
Yeah, Doug Wright won our series. For those of you who don't know the car, it's probably one of the prettiest Hemi. I think it's Belvedere. It's a 64, like a copper color. He's been in a bunch of magazines. He runs NMCA a lot with the Nostalgia Superstock series. But this car is just beautiful. I mean, every piece of chrome is right, interior is right. I mean, it reminds me of something, you know, we all know every car Jim Bailey's ever had. It's on the same level as that stuff. I mean, Bailey's cars have always been just, you know, spotless. And this thing, same way. But this guy, man, he not only has got a beautiful car, but he drives the wheels off this thing. I mean, since he's been racing with us the last 2 years, I think he's won two events, run up another one. Got to the semis a couple times, and about the only time the guy loses is the car's pretty hard on rear ends and some other stuff because it's one of them old Mopars that's pretty heavy. You know, he's broke a converter, he's broke a rear end, and, you know, that kind of hurts him more than his driving. Is just, you know, the car just seems to be hard on parts. But, you know, a good guy, beautiful car, you know, can drive the starting line and the finish line, you know, with any stock superstock guy in the country.
Yeah, for sure. And then on the Buckeye series, they actually did a little bit different. They ran, we talked about this earlier in the season, they ran basically a championship runoff during the NHRA Northern Sports Nationals at Columbus last
month.
Kind of
like the old TOC.
Yeah, exactly like the old IHRA Tournament of Champions. And it was, you know, it ended up being really cool. They ran it. It's Saturday night of the NHRA Sports Nationals and had a pretty good group of at least racer fans, you know, lining the fences and kind of watching it. So I thought that was pretty cool. And Brad Ross, one of the family members, the Ross family members in the Mopar camp, was the winner. And congratulations to him and for a great season, not only to get into the runoff, and I think you had to get into the runoff, I believe you had to win a race, and then they took, I think it was winner runner-up, and then they took the next few top points finishers to kind of round out the field of 16. So
yeah, I think you got to run so many races with their deal, too. I think you just can't run one and win and then show up to it. I think they got a little bit of a deal, I believe. Maybe they changed that. I know they want you to run at least a couple of them because they've got seven or eight of those races throughout the year, I think.
Yeah, so not sure when we get him on here, we'll have to ask him about that. The Can-Am series, they wrapped up their points championship, and I'm friends with a fair amount of those guys on Facebook back from the old IHRA days. And it seemed like they had a pretty tight battle that kind of went back and forth all year. And Alan Sawicki actually ended up winning the race. I know they said it was his first championship, so we'll get him on. I really don't, to be honest, I don't know much about him, but he was a big winner up there. And a lot of good racers in that series that have had, you know, those guys don't travel a ton out of the Can-Am series. But I know, you know, every once in a while they'll kind of come down and hit your series or some of the NHRA races, you know, Norwalk and some of the D1 races. And those guys are pretty competitive. So nobody you want to run, definitely.
Yeah, it's tough to get those guys across the water. You know, Doug Box does a pretty good job coming over, and Cantusi and Wally and a couple other guys, Jamie Groves. Those guys, man, they like to stick over there.
Yeah, for sure. So he was a big one up there, and then the Carolina Racers Association, they have a few more races to go. So looking for someone to race, drive to the Carolinas. There's still a few races to go. So it's the championship is not yet wrapped up there. And then the East Coast Association, if those guys do, it looks like Joe Lisa, obviously a well-known name in the Superstock ranks from T1, was the big winner up over there. So congrats to Joe Lisa and the East Coast team. Looks like they had a pretty good slate of events once again in 2019. All right, so next, Charlie, we want to talk about some of these statement of actions that NHRA is kind of, I don't know if this is a new thing or I've just noticed it more recently, but, I mean, some of these are pretty funny, Charlie. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Mad Hawaiian smacked the wall. Where was it, Maple Grove?
Yeah, Maple Grove.
And I think they put out a thing, you know, this and that, and he's got to take, you know, one. It's like, really? I mean, is this necessary? I mean, he knows he smacked the wall. You know, he may have gotten the brakes too hard. Track may have been shitty. You know, I don't really, I mean, okay, so you're going to make him take, you know, one of them deals. I mean, my whole thing is, you know, you kicked out, you know, one of the Emmonses, what was it, last year? For excessive braking. I don't think they made them guys take, you know, that race as one of their eight. You know, I haven't seen anything in the rule book that's changed, so, you know, why all of a sudden now are we making guys like that? And then, you know, Chip Johnson, same thing. You know, guys were complaining the day before about the track being shitty. You know, that Rockingham, he gets on the brakes a little hard in one of Darren's Pool Adams Copos, you know, drives it right into the wall. And, you know, they do the same kind of thing, you know, excessive braking, you know, it's going to count as one of your five division races. You got to take a 10 or, you know, whatever the thing kind of said. It's just kind of a joke. I mean, these guys, you know, smacked up these cars. I mean, that one that, you know, that Chip Direct is probably a $100,000, $80,000 car. You know, yeah. The Mad Hawaiians car, you know, I put that thing at somewhere between, you know, $40,000 and $55,000. I mean, these guys got to go out and put new front end in these cars. I mean, spend $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 fixing these things, you know, and then they got to put this little thing on an NHRA racer, kind of, you know. I don't know. I guess I don't see the purpose in that. You know,
like a week plus later too. Is it not like
yeah. You know, it's, you know, and then was it Jamie Hutto? He got booted at Dallas for the bleeder screws or something were just a skosh long. I mean, really, I mean, you'd be better off to cheat a half a thou on a camshaft than that. I mean, I don't know if that really deserves a, you know, statement of action, you know, that, of course, it's vague, you know, so now nobody knows really what it says other than he got thrown out. So, you know, that's how that thing all spirals out of control. But from guys that were there, they said, man, it was just kind of a, you know, really something. He got thrown out for just some kind of technical, you know, deal. There's really was no performance in what he got thrown out for. So,
well, I think the other thing, like our good friend here in D3 that got thrown out after refusing the teardown, you know, they had a statement of action on him this summer. But they did not, I don't think they ever posted what the suspension was, right, Charlie?
No, I mean, so here you go. You know, we've got these guys smack the wall, and, you know, this guy's going to get this, this, and this. And then we got people that, you know, refuse teardown and this and that. And, you know, nobody still knows what the – I mean, we've all heard it's been 6 months and this and that. But, you know, I mean, you know, what is it? I mean, I remember when it used to be forever, it was if you refused a teardown, it was a year suspension. I mean – there was a guy in Texas that did it. A guy from Canada and Indy one time left after he won class, and they said, well, come back in a year, you know. I mean, so, I mean, these are all cut-and-dry rules that, you know, of course, aren't cut-and-dry anymore because nobody knows what's going on at the top.
Yeah, so, man, it'll be interesting. I guess we'll find out in the spring on that one.
So...
All right, Charlie. Well, we got a big interview coming up here, so let's not waste too much more time. But let's do a quick pick 'em on this weekend's
Las Vegas National event. So who do you got? Who you got Superstock?
Superstock. Let's see here. Mark and Matt Alley. They're making the trip from out east. Mark rode it up at Gainesville earlier this year in the dark. You know, that Vegas race will be at the dark again, most of it probably. I'm going to say Mark gets through. He's got his brother there helping him. Not that he's going to be any help, but he'll still be there for moral support. So that's your, I'm going to pick Mark Alvey this weekend.
Mark Alvey. Nice. Good pick. Good pick. Great guy. I think, is that their first trip out west, you know?
Yeah, Mark just retired. You know, I let him down because I know last year we were talking about it with Matt because Matt and I are real close, and a bunch of us, we said, oh, yeah, we'll go out west, you know, and, you know, they had kind of planned this out, you know, over the last 18 months, and, well, push came to shove, and we got caught up working, and our crops are late, so it just wasn't going to work out for us to go, and, you know, those guys were, they'd been pot committed on this thing for the last 12 months, so they, I think they took off either, yeah, I think they took off Sunday to go out there. So him and his brother, and Matt got a pretty nice rig here a couple years back and all two cars for him and his son, and I think they're just taking out his super stocker and his brother's super stocker out there, so they're going to hit Vegas and Pomona, so should be a good time for those guys if they don't get in any trouble.
Nice. Well, if your pick is worth anything, you're paying back there, so.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go way out on the limb here and pick Justin Lamb in super stock. You know, he's never done very good out there, so.
Yeah. Don't fall out of the tree there.
Yeah, I hate to do it, but, I mean, if you look at the list, I mean, he's at his home track. He didn't lose often, so I'm going to go Jay Lamb.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be even money at that place every time. I mean, he drives so good there day, night, morning, afternoon. It doesn't matter whose car, his car, Barson's car, Copo. I mean, he can drive there, man. We can drive anywhere, you know.
So. All right, I'll be nice and give you the first pick in stock as well.
Oh, man, I got to go with Captain Jack again. He's getting back in the old Kingswood wagon. Hasn't driven it in 6-8 months. Went 3 rounds there in the springtime. He's really been struggling with the El Camino the last couple of weeks. You know, hurt a motor in it this summer, broke rear end with it at the Fall Classic. So, I mean, maybe a little Vegas luck for the camping.
Nice. That would be a good story. 60 Kingwood.
Yep. Oldest stocker on the premise, man.
Is it? Yeah, it probably is.
Boy, well, yeah, it's got to be. You can't run anything pre-60, can you, in stock anymore? Oh, yeah, you're in 55 Chevys. That's right. They changed it, but nobody's got any money because they all restored them all. So I think there's like two in the country.
I don't think it's the greatest combination, but it would be cool.
The 283 dual 4-barrel would be kind of neat.
What class would that make?
I think it makes like N automatic. There's a guy in Division 1 or Division 5 that's got one. It doesn't run worth a crap, but it's a neat car.
I like it. All right, stock. I'm gonna go with Slade Cummings. You know, he's making a trip out there. From our quick math, it looks like if he ran the table, he could catch Allison. And I think that'd be pretty cool if somebody did at least win the first of two races to kind of make that interesting. I think it'd make it for a great story.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
sorry,
even
Allison,
if...
Sorry, Allison, if I'm making you nervous.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd like at least to come down to at least the last race. I mean, nobody likes looking at points, you know, with 6 or 7 races or 4 or 5 and everything's all decided. That's no fun at all.
Yeah, so.
You know, like a couple years back when the Pro Stock guys, you know, had it all wrapped up, I think, before. Shit, I think it was wrapped up before Dallas that one year.
Yeah. Well, now we got the countdown, so they've tried to make it a little bit more interesting.
Yep. Oh, man, we got one more quick note. Super Stock and Stock Limited driver Tyler B., he won the $30,000 race at the Million, I think, here this last week, him and Dilly. So, seen some pictures of those guys partying pretty hard here a couple nights ago.
Yeah, and I was actually watching a little bit online. I was actually painting my house and listening to it in my headphones, in full disclosure. But Tyler B., I think Tyler B. was down to the last 15, 20 cars in the actual the million itself, which they actually finished before they finished the 30 grander. And I think he missed the tree a little bit, whatever round that was. But he was pretty deep in that as well, and then came back and kind of redeemed himself and won the 30 grander. So, they put some very, I'll just throw this out here, very questionable pictures on Facebook, like Charlie said. For some reason, him and Mr. Mudd are in their, one's in boxers and one's in their shorts with no shirts on. Both drinking, so in the trailer. So not sure why two dudes are in the trailer with the shirts on, but looked like they were.
I didn't see any ladies that were minus any clothes either, so they got some, you know, splaining to do if you ask me.
Well, I'm guessing Tyler B's girlfriend probably took a picture, so that's, you know.
I mean, I can understand stripping down your boxers if there's women, you know, at the same level, but two dudes in a trailer holding the check, that's a... You know, it's a whole other story. I mean, that was a $30,000 check, so, you know, they get a little bit of slack.
All right, well, Tyler, you get to explain this to us before the next episode.
Yep.
We'll tell them.
Good job, man. Good job.
Yeah, awesome. So. Awesome. All right, well, next here we're gonna get Robbie on the line here and interview him, talk a little about his awesome Corvette. And his big win last week or so at the Charlotte National event. So let's get him on the line here.
All right.
Okay, for tonight's interview, we have Robbie Drawhorn, a recent winner of the ZMAX Charlotte NHRA National event. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for jumping on here.
Yeah, no problem. Pretty cool.
So those of you that don't know Robbie, I don't know Robbie real well, but I did kind of get to meet you a little bit last year. I was racing my stock Eliminator B-stick car down at actually the same race at Charlotte in the fall, and me and my dad were having a lot of trouble with the clutch and had broken some fingers and stuff, and Robbie was parked across from us, unfortunately for him, and he jumped right in there, and we had the clutch out of it, I think, I don't know, three times maybe?
Yeah.
Excuse me, through the weekend. And kind of helped us patch it together and keep it running. So we got to know a little bit through that. And, man, very, very knowledgeable and was just jumped right in there to help, almost strangers. So we've known a little bit since then and obviously a great guy. But wanted to have him on tonight because he won his, I think that's your first national event win, right? NHRA at least.
Yeah, first NHRA national.
I know that you raced IHRA for many years as well before.
Oh, yeah.
Robbie, one reason I want to get him on here is not only awesome big win at one of the biggest races of the year, but you did it in a way that's a little bit different than most people do it. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about your car?
Well, I've always been a stick guy, and I've run a stick superstock car since probably 2005, and that's just the way I've always liked to do it, and then it's a 66 Corvette built like an old school modified car. My dad had a modified Corvette when I was a kid, and that was kind of my dream car, and we actually built the car ourselves, got it finished in 2016, and I haven't run it all that much. It's probably got 150 runs on it from brand new, so you know it's still working bugs out of it all the time. But you know it's a really fun car to drive.
Yeah, for sure. And like Robbie said, it's not only a stick car. He didn't only do a stick car; he did a stick modified car. So he kind of jumped right in there. And for those of you that have not gotten a chance to see the car, it's not only fun and fast and, you know, leaves well, but it's a beautiful car as well. You guys did a great job building it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah. It was my dream car. You know, it's what I always wanted. And, I'd searched for a body for one of those cars for years and never found one. And one day I was on the internet and looking at the Corvette forums, and they had a C2 for sale thing on a message board, and I just put an ad on there that I was looking a C2 coupe body, and a guy in Florida sent me a message and sent me some pictures, and it was exactly what I was looking. So we went and bought the body, and it was actually a no-hit, stock body, and a lot of people would probably been mad at me for cutting it up, but, you know, you want what you want, and, you know, I cut it up, made a race car out of it.
What kind of shape was it in when you got it?
It was kind of a basket case project. The guy had started building a resto mod, but the body was absolutely perfect. The paint was nice on it, and, it would have made a nice street car, but, you know, some things are made to build race cars out of, so that's what I did.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Now, was the plan always to do a modified combination of some sort for it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there ain't nothing cool with a modified car. Got to be able to turn it 10 grand or it just takes the fun out of it.
Well, I definitely like your attitude there. Now, when I was talking to you at Charlotte, because I attended this race as well, I unfortunately was a first-round runner-up. But I know you had some, I won't say trouble, but maybe some hard work, some adversity on your way to Charlotte and the weeks kind of running up to it. I want you to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I drive Ernie Neal's 92 Corvette, the super stock I-stick car, a lot of the time. And, you know, I hadn't planned on running my car any rest of the year. I was going to run the rest of the season out in Ernie's car. And first qualifying run up at the Division One race in Virginia, dropped a valve and hurt the motor in it. And that was Friday morning, and we just loaded everything up and rushed home. And I got to thinking about what I could do to make Charlotte. And I said, well, I got a motor that we hadn't run in a while. It's short blocked, and I got a new set of heads for it laying there. So we'll put that together, and I just kind of worked 2 days straight and got a motor together and got it in the car and fired it up Sunday evening at about 6 o'clock, and it sounded good, and we washed the car, put in the trailer, and headed to Charlotte for stacking. And everything ended up first pass. Car, you know, it ain't no ball of lightning. It's a pretty old motor, probably 15 years old, but it runs like 30 under first hit, and that's good enough. Just had one other a modified car to Dodge because I got my butt whooped in class, and ended up on the other side of the ladder, so pretty smooth sailing.
Yeah, definitely. And so the motor was fresh when you put it in. Didn't have a chance to dyno or anything, huh?
No, we just kind of threw it together. And the intake I wanted to run wouldn't fit the new heads, so I had to run a old intake I had, and only one carburetor on it, where I normally run two. Just a lot of unknown with it, but it was actually probably the most consistent piece I've ever had in a car.
Yeah, I was going to say, with the brand new motor, fresh motor at that, over 3 days at National Event Track with, pretty different weathers. Looking at Drag Race Central here, it looks like your car varied 400ths all weekend. So
yeah.
I would say you definitely had it figured out. You obviously did a pretty good job putting it together. And in the last four runs, if you don't count E5, where it looks like you lifted, you ran within 6 thou.
Yeah, the guy, E5, I run Dave Childs, and he went red, and I just ran a car to 8 mile and clicked it. You know, I'd make enough runs, no point in punishing it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's talk a little about Charlotte. I mean, you took out definitely some hitters. I mean, you did not have an easy way to the final. I mean, you took out Kevin Reiner, who's won several national events in the last 2 years. Obviously, a great young driver.
Reiner,
you took out.
Go ahead. Say, Reiner's one of my best friends.
We
travel together and usually, go out to eat every night at the races. He only lives probably 25 minutes from me, so, you know, he helps me a lot, too. He's a, you know, he works down at Warren Engines, and, you know, I need some help. He's one of the first ones I call because he's a pretty sharp guy, you know, and he's the last one I want to run first round. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure, but it looks like you were 30, dead 7 against him. And second round, you ran Wendy Caliendo, 30 again, dead 7. And then round 3, you had one of the Warner brothers, always tough.
Yeah, that was a double breakout. That was pretty tight. I think I took one foul on him, and that worked out. And I think I was 40, and he was 47, so I had, you know, 10 foul to get in on that double breakout.
Nice, very nice. Yeah, I mean, and those guys are tough. I mean, not only are they tough all the time, but, man, they seem to own Charlotte.
Yeah.
I believe they've won that race. You know, I had Byron on earlier this year on the podcast, and I can't remember exactly what their record was at the at Charlotte, but it's pretty darn good.
Pretty good, yeah. Yeah, that was one of the ones I was worried about was running him. I couldn't get by him, you know. Might be downhill from there, you know. Just all started working out.
Sure. Well, you got by him, and then you came back, and you had to run Steve Camello, who's currently in the chase for the national championship. You got a little bit of a long shot, but still in the running, and I think currently probably en route or getting ready to be en route to Las Vegas to chase points.
Yeah.
And he's always tough in that Hemi car as well. So
yeah, I was worried about that round too because he was faster than me. That was probably the only guy that was going to chase me, and I dialed down to got a little more honest at the finish line because, you know, at Corvette, you can't see behind you too good. So kind of got it where I could judge the finish line, you know, a little later on him. And, you know, I think he missed a tree a little bit. He was like maybe 70. I think I was 24.
24, yeah.
Yeah, and just got down there. And I kind of got on the brakes pretty hard that round. I slid the tires through the finish line. Luckily, it didn't smoke, and they didn't get me on it. You know, and that was pretty exciting round. The other cool thing about when I come off the end of the track, you know, you got the flag guy that'll kind of wave you one way or the other at Charlotte.
Yeah.
And the guy waved me over to the scales and fuel check on the paved side because I was parked on the Pro Mod side behind the dirt track.
Okay.
And,
yeah.
So I scaled and fuel checked over on that side, and I come back across to our side of the track, and I come by the scales and come by the fuel check tent over there, and they didn't know that they had weighed me over there. My wife chased me like, "You idiot, you just passed the scales," and, you know, and she's freaking out, and I said, "Relax, relax, I scaled on the other side, it's all good," and she's like, "Phew," you know, she's freaking out, and so that was a... You know, one of the things that happened up there, I guess. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and for those of you that have not been to Charlotte or have not raced there, it's kind of I'll call it a convoluted pit. But
yeah.
They have for a track that has as much room as it does, they have a relatively small pit on, if you're looking down the track, would be on the left side. And on the left side, they have the pros, and then they have a small amount of sportsmen. And basically the only way to get around the track is across the top end. So all the way at the end of the track, there's a passover. I would say probably about 60 to 70% of the stock superstock guys end up parking on the non-paved side, you know, over by where Robbie just said he parked. And I was over there as well, kind of in the dirt and the sand behind the dirt track. And it kind of causes a lot of issues because there are staging lanes on both sides of the track. And when you're pairing up for eliminations or class or whatever, if your guy's on the other side of the staging lane, you don't actually see them or talk to them before you run. What they do is they have tech officials on each side, and they get on the radio, and they'll actually do the coin toss sometimes right over the radio. They'll pick lanes over the radio. And then they just kind of put you in order, and you kind of just come
up the staging lanes, and when you are ready to pull out, your guy's on the other side. So it's kind of one of the weirdest, I don't even know what, how to describe it, the weirdest kind of layouts and staging lanes that I've ever been a part of. And then, like Robbie said, at the other end, at the finish line, it's always kind of confusing because sometimes, depending on if they have both scales open, you have to go to the left side, which would be the paved where that scales and fuel check is. And sometimes they have both of them open. So I went, I think, the fourth round a couple years ago there in the fall. And when you start getting going, it's kind of scary. It's like, well, can I turn off to the right? Is there a scale open or do I need to go to the other side? It's kind of a mess for sure. So definitely causes confusion. And I can see why your wife was worried.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. I thought she was going to beat me, but
now, the other thing about Charlotte that I think is worth bringing up and probably didn't talk about, but they I was probably home by the time you guys ran the second round, but my 8-hour drive. But they decided to run the whole event, all the rounds on Saturday. Because they had some weather coming in on Sunday, and I think it's a good thing they did because I think they did indeed rain out on Sunday, all the pros. So,
yeah.
I guess, what did you think about that when they kind of made that announcement? Were you excited about that, bad about that? You know, what do you think about racing at night? Just what's your take on all that?
Well, I liked it better, and I thought that was kind of going to play into my hands because I bracket race pretty much every Saturday night when I'm not, you know, running NHRA. And I don't block. I count the tree, you know, with a stick car, and, you know, that a lot of people have trouble blocking at night, and, you know, for me counting, it really, you know, don't bother me at night. So, I thought that was an advantage as far as I was concerned. And two, the cool thing, you kind of running back to back, so, you know, you don't have a big weather swing either, you know, kind of more set up like a normal Saturday night bracket race that way. So that's I like it for sure.
And I would have to agree with you that the times that I've had the opportunity to do that, I think it's an advantage too. I think it allows you to get a little bit of a rhythm. I also don't block anymore. I did for a long time, but I'm off of it. Cold turkey on the blinder. I quit it a couple years back, but. And yeah, I think it's an advantage. A lot of people block, and you cannot do it at night. There's guys that try, but it can't be done successfully. So,
I don't know. My buddy Reiner's won games with not blocking. So,
does he? Okay, well, yeah. Maybe he can do it. There's a few people that do it. I know he's pretty close with Volkman and his family, and I know Mike. Blinders at night too, so maybe they got it figured out. But anytime I ever tried it, you know, you'd be good for a round or two, and then you'd be like 600 or minus 100, and just make yourself look embarrassingly bad.
Yeah.
So they finished it on Saturday night, and you got past your kind of scales wife mad at you debacle. You're down to four cars, and you got to run David Trials.
I've run him or Brian in that car a bunch before because, you know, they'll come run, like, the combo races with us, the CCRA races down in North Carolina. And, you know, they're good guys. I know they're tough. And I made a little air pressure adjustment when I run him to kind of tighten it up. And I was 19 on him, and I think he was, like, 001 red. So got a free pass on that one, and I just – clicked it early and come back for the final.
Yeah, I mean, you had to be feeling pretty good going into the final. I mean, your car's running great. You've been 20, just been 19. How did you feel coming into the final? I mean, were you nervous or?
Well, I was kind of confident, but you know, I was kind of pumped up, you know, and I when I pulled down the hill, the pull in the water box, I said, make sure you see that thing. You don't want to go red because Tabitha would have really kicked my ass if I'd have went red in the final. And I don't know if you know my wife, but she can be pretty mean. So I didn't want that on me. So, you know, I made sure I seen it in the final. I was 65. I missed it pretty good. And, luckily Jimmy was, you know, what was right there behind me. I think he was, what, 56 or something. And
And Jimmy had been 004, 000, and 11 coming into the final. So
if he hadn't won stock, he probably wouldn't have relaxed like that. You know, he'd already won stock, and the pressure was off of him. You know, and that's probably what happened.
That may be some of it. Yeah, Jimmy Daniels was in both finals. Yeah, that Robbie brought it up. Did win stock. Come up a little short in super stock.
Yeah. Yeah, he's tough, man. And, you know, we both kind of missed it a little bit in the final and run down there, and luckily his car didn't quite run the number and left me enough room. I dropped the front end, took 003. And,
I was going to ask you if you were out of it all, if that was pretty much flat out.
Yeah, I was holding probably a tenth all night, except when I run Camilla. That's why you build a modified car, so you can control the finish line, you know?
Yep, I understand that. I just wish I would have had a little faster one down there, because I got beat heads up first round.
that's the only ugly part, you know? There's a couple guys with fast cars that really run, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, I just didn't qualify well in Rick Mann's. Heck of a nice guy, and I mean he's got a car that would probably qualify and pump decently. Oh, so you know, can't be too mad about that, and he works at it hard just to go fast. So you get beat heads up every once in a while. I'm not going to be too upset, but of course you never want to. I was kind of hoping to end the year on a high note, but it was you instead. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So how did the final celebration work kind of on a Saturday night? Did NHRA kind of make it special? Was there a fair amount of people around? Just because, you know, sometimes on Sunday, you know, all the racers leave, but I mean, I would think most of the racers that went a few rounds on Saturday were probably there kind of hanging out.
Oh yeah. Yeah. A lot of my friends were down there, the Boltmans, you know, Mike and Emily and, you know, Emily's dad, Larry Stott, and Kevin Reiner and Case, and, you know, they were all down there. And Jamie Southard, she's been traveling with us racing here, you know, since pretty much Bowling Green, where she wrecked her super gas car. We've kind of been hanging out with her a lot. And she helped us, you know, in between rounds in the pits, because they were kind of rushing us pretty quick. Of course my wife Tabitha was down there, and she brought our cat Simon. He was in the winner's circle. You've seen the winner's circle pictures, and the auto injury guy said that was the first time he'd seen a cat in a winner's circle picture. That was kind of crazy. But I guess, you know, run the final at 12:20, and by the time we took pictures and all that stuff, you know, it's 2:00. And, man, I hadn't eaten anything all day, nothing open. We eat at a Sonic at 2 in the morning. That was our winter celebration. Wasn't anything special.
Nice.
But.
Nice. Well, it's memorable at anything, right?
Yep. Yep.
Telling that story for a long time. That's pretty cool. Well, I just want to say congrats again to you and your wife and, you know, all the guys that helped you. That's a pretty cool story. And you know, I would think out of all the national events that are out there, you know, there's obviously a couple ones that are on most people's bucket list. And I know that Charlotte's probably kind of started to become onto that bucket list. It's a cool track, one of the cooler races of the year. I guess they have two there now. But definitely one of the races that I'd like to win before I give it up. So.
Yeah, well, that's the closest one to my house. I only stay about 2.5 hours from Charlotte. So,
okay.
You know, definitely the one I would, you know, would want to win, because it's where all my people are going to be there. So that was
very cool. Very cool. Well, so what's the plan for next year? You know, you obviously finished this year on a high note, or I guess maybe are you still racing? I mean, you got any more races this year? Or?
There's a couple combo races. Got one down at Fayetteville, which is my home track. It's only like 10 minutes from my shop. And Then there's another one down at Coastal Plains, and both of them are 2 days, so I guess four races left to, to run the combos. And then I'll probably go to Piedmont for Thanksgiving, run the foot brake race there. They usually have, I think, a 25 grand foot brake race. So
okay, nice.
I'll do that.
Now, do you have another car that you bracket race, or do you run this car some?
I've actually got a 69 Camaro with a stick in it that I bracket race a lot, and
okay.
I drive a Nova. It's a super stock. It was an old IHRA production car. I drive for Darren Buckram from down Goldsboro, and it's got automatic in it, and that's the only thing with automatic I drive. Which I may run it at Piedmont. I don't really know what I'm going to do yet as far as that, but I'll bracket race a stick car, just the same.
Nice. Well, it sounds like you got a busy fall coming up here a little bit. And what about next year? What's the plan? Kind of, I know that this year at NHRA, you and Ernie kind of raced quite a bit together and partnered up to some extent. It seemed like you ran a little bit more than you usually do on the NHRA side.
Yeah. Me and Ernie kind of teamed up, and he spent quite a bit of time at my shop last winter and working on some R&D projects. He always qualifies on the top at Indy. He comes up with some pretty awesome combinations, run way under the index, and working on a ZR1 LT5 combination for his Corvette. 32 valve overhead cam combination. I don't know if we'll have it ready for Indy next year, but that would be a really cool if we could. Something to try to qualify at the top, and he always tries to do something really different. So
yeah, I remember those motors. That's a pretty neat deal. What's it rated at, Robbie?
We're working on everything to get it all in the book.
Okay, I was going to ask, is it in the book yet?
It was factored at 375. I think just going to get in the book at like 322. And
okay,
it figured like Super Stock G. So that's kind of working on that. And,
yeah, that should be that'll be a pretty unique motor. I mean, there's probably not too many. I mean, that's probably one of the only 32 valve.
Yeah,
motors
it's going to be something really neat. It's definitely outside the box stuff, and it's more like a Formula One motor or something. What it's going to be, the RPM potential will just be, way crazy with it. So
that's very cool. I'm sure that'll be a fun project to work on.
Yeah, I can't wait to get that all going. And I'm working on some SB2 stuff for my modified stuff, trying to get that back going. I've been running a wedge motor, the one I ran at Charlotte, but I'm gonna try to get my fast stuff back together, or at least got a chance in class, and get that going. And we're gonna redo my Camaro this winter too. We're gonna put a fuel injected motor in it for GT, and try to get it back going. So a lot of irons in the fire. I don't know if we'll get it all done this winter, but that's the plan.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it sounds like you definitely have a busy winter ahead with all just those projects that you discussed a little bit. For those of you that are those of the listeners that don't know you very well, what do you do for a living? I know that you have an engine shop and a machine shop. Why don't you tell the listeners a little about that, and how long you've been doing it, and kind of what your focus has been?
Yeah, we basically are a race engine shop and a dyno and a complete machine shop. Crane grinding, line boring, CNC block work, kind of in much we can't handle. I've been doing it for a living for probably 7-8 years now, and kind of was doing it on the side before that, and just it kind of just blew up to where I kind of had to pick between having a real job or working on race car stuff. And, you know, it's a lot cooler to work on race car stuff than have a real job. So.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what was your real job before this?
I worked for the telephone company.
Okay.
Yeah, I was there for 18 years and just kind of got where I make as much money at night on the side, you know, doing machine work and building engines as I did at work, and kind of had to choose. So I chose doing what I wanted to do instead of what I had to do.
Yeah, this going racing thing's not real cheap. So it seems like a lot of people in the sport have some sort of side hustle to make some money.
Yeah, when I started doing it full time, I kind of lost my side hustle, but it's all good. At least I got time to go racing now. Where, you know, when I had to work a real job, I couldn't leave on Tuesday or Wednesday to go race. So it's a whole lot better for doing this kind of racing.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's the one bad thing about NHRA. It definitely takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
All right, well, cool. Well, anything else you want to tell the listeners?
I can't really think of anything. The biggest thing, want to thank my wife's business, Redline Speed Shop. She actually sells parts. You know, that's, you know, my biggest supporter. She does a lot of behind the scenes, you know, a lot of people don't see. You know, she's keeps the show on the road, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when I do these interviews and talk to these racers, it's a pretty common thread that almost everybody's got somebody at home or somebody that goes with them that is a big part of the operation, and without them, it'd make it a lot tougher, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
Very cool. Well, thanks for jumping on here tonight and talking a little bit about your big win. Again, just love to congrats. Congratulate you again on an awesome win. And definitely one of the coolest cars that I, you know, at the racetrack, in my opinion. I did have one last question for you. How many stickers did you have on that car when you did the contingency?
A big old goose egg.
Zero.
Zero. Yep. Man, we had Ernie's car all stickered up, and, you know, I just planned on running it, and hadn't planned on running mine, and we threw that thing together and didn't put the first sticker on it, so she was pretty in the winner's circle.
Yeah, I figured that probably wasn't your plan, but I think a car that beautiful would be hard to put a bunch of stickers on too. So,
yeah. Well, there'll be a contingency wrap on it next race, I promise you.
Yeah, that's what always happens, right? You do good, and then you realize all the money you missed out on, and then you put a bunch of stickers on, and don't do good. But I'm sure you'll do good next year. And I think you know, if you keep driving like you did at Charlotte, I think you'll definitely have some more Wallys in your future.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Aaron.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for jumping on, and have a great rest of your evening.
All right. Take care.
That concludes the Class Racing Podcast. Please remember to visit racetoolsdirect.com for all of your tools and equipment needs.